How we talked about that Empowerment Scholarship Account bill, the House Education Committee this afternoon is scheduled to take up that bill after an identical version won the approval of a Senate committee last week. Jonathan Butcher, Education Director at the Goldwater Institute, is one of the measure's supporters, and he joins me. So, Jonathan, first off, give me your elevator pitch about why this expansion of ESAs is a good idea.
Every child deserves a chance at a quality education. And there are schools across Arizona that are serving students well. But the fact is that, like any state, there are schools where students are not able to fit in, whether it's bullying, whether it's additional needs that a school just isn't set to provide for that student. There are children that need additional services. For that matter, there are families that have different goals for their children than perhaps a school district may offer. And it should be within the parent's ability to find a quality learning experience for their child. And ESAs facilitate that. They make that possible.
One of the arguments, and I know that you've heard this quite a bit, is that by giving out these empowerment scholarship accounts, you're essentially taking money out of public schools at a time when Arizona's public schools still, by most accounts, need a fair bit of money. Why is that not a concern to you?
Well, it's not that it's not a concern to me, but the way that Arizona's funding formula works, that it affects different districts differently, and it affects different children differently. So, for example, children with special needs and children who are leaving a charter school to use an education savings account actually result in a cost savings to the state because of the way that our funding formula is set up. There are districts that don't receive any money from the state. There are other districts that receive significantly more money from the state to pay for services. So, you know, how education savings accounts affect students statewide is really different depending on the student's situation.
You mentioned the state's funding formula, and that is something that has been on the minds of Governor Ducey and his Classrooms First Council. Do you think that it would be a good idea to maybe see what the legislature can do as far as reworking that formula before going for this basically full expansion?
Well, the expansion is phased in over the course of 4 years. It doesn't happen all at once. And there is still a cap on the program of about 5,500 new students added to education savings accounts each year. So there, we already have a way that the expansion of the program it's sort of pacing itself so that districts and state agencies can adjust as the program grows. So that's to start. As for reforming the funding formula, there have been efforts on and off, I mean, frankly, for 15-plus years to tweak the school funding formula. And so while that is going on, we have children that need a quality education today or need a different option today. Again, they may be happy in their local district school, and that's fine. But for those that aren't, it's not fair to them to say, well, let's just wait till we get the funding formula right, and then we'll give you a better option. I don't think that's fair to families.
On the issue of the cap, at the point where this phase-in would be fully phased in, the cap would basically go away. Would you support a new cap on the number of students who could use these ESAs at that time?
Well, right now, the fact is that private school choice programs grow pretty slowly. There are 3,500 students using the accounts right now, and the cap is about 5,500 students. So we haven't even hit the cap with the existing program, which has been around for 5 years, and already, by the way, some 240,000 students are eligible. So I think it is safe to say, based on past experience, that the program is going to grow at a pretty steady rate, particularly with this 4-year phase-in, such that agencies and school districts will be able to, you know, pace themselves and adjust as the program expands.
What do you think is the ultimate potential? I mean, when it's fully phased in, how many or what percentage of students in the state do you think at its peak might be using these?
It's hard to predict. I think it will depend on, it's going to depend student by student. I think I hope that the parents that are happy with their traditional districts, happy with their charter school, happy with open enrollment or whatever that may be, I hope that they can keep their choice and keep doing what they're doing. No one's going to force them to change. But for those families that feel like the flexibility built into the accounts is valuable to them, you know, the idea behind this expansion is to give them the option if they need it. You know, if we look at the growth of the program over the past couple of years, it doubled in size, starting at about 75 kids in 2011. So we started with a pretty small number. It has slowed down, at least in this past year, as the Department of Education has, you know, adjusted to a larger pool of eligibility as it is now. So it's just, it's hard to predict.
Would you think that more schools might open up, more charter schools or more private schools, especially in some of the rural areas where even if parents might not be thrilled with their kids' district school, there might just not be any other choices that are feasible for them to get to?
Yes, and I think we've seen that already, particularly on the Native American reservations, as those students have been added to the eligibility pool. I think there has been, you know, albeit small, but there is more access now for some children living on those reservations to private schools. So yes, I think that it is, we're seeing that bear out, particularly for not just for children living on Native American reservations, but also for children with special needs. So yes, I do expect to see more options grow as more children become interested in the program.
That's Jonathan Butcher, Education Director of the Goldwater Institute. He'll be testifying this afternoon in favor of House Bill 2394, which would phase in an expansion of empowerment scholarship accounts, essentially offering vouchers to every public school student in Arizona. The proposal is making advocates of traditional district schools nervous, and joining me now to talk about that is Chris Cotterman. He is Government Relations Director for the Arizona School Boards Association. And Chris, I'm going to ask you the same first question. Give me your elevator pitch as to why this expansion is not a good idea.
Well, thanks for having me, Mark. I think the first thing to note is that when we talk about public schools, we're talking about funding that is shared by the property taxpayer and the state. And when you take a student out of district school and you put them in an ESA, the argument that you're saving the state money goes out the window because the general fund pays the entire bill for that student. The property taxpayer shares nothing. So the idea that we're saving money is just not accurate. And we're concerned about with schools that have ongoing needs for capital, trouble retaining teachers, where our teacher pay is quite low in the state. We are just very concerned that these are going to eat up a larger and larger portion of the general fund, and less funds are going to be available not only to fund the public school formula, but also transportation, healthcare, anything that the state's responsible for. And this legislature, who prides itself on being very fiscally conservative, is not taking that into account.
Do you think that should this program expand, should these bills become law and more students are using these ESAs, does that make the current funding problems that public schools are having worse?
Absolutely. I think Mr. Butcher is right. There is a formula in place. But the way this thing works in the Reader's Digest version is if you're the property taxpayer and I'm the state and you pay $40 and I pay $60 for a $100 public school student, when that student leaves, you still pay your $40 to the school district because the state saves money first, and now I get to pay 90% of that, which is $90, when I was paying $60 before. That doesn't sound to me like it's saving money. Every time you do that, you make less dollars available to fund the formula and everything else the state's responsible for.
If there are fewer students in the public schools, though, doesn't that reduce by definition the amount of money that they need?
For the school district, well, let's talk about what the formula funds and what the needs are, because they're not the same. The schools have needs that are greater than what the current funding allotment allows. We're not even funding the current formula right now fully. The state is suspending about $350 million worth of funding from public school districts. If they gave that back, it's a different conversation, but they haven't. Even then, the school district doesn't have to educate that student, and they don't have the formula allotment for that student. So, yes, there is some cost that the school district doesn't have to bear. Bear in mind, though, that the infrastructure that the school district was responsible for every student that presents, has a certain amount of fixed cost. Private schools don't have school buses that have to run every day. They don't have to feed kids lunch every day if they don't want to. All these things, cost money.
John, we talked with Jonathan about what he thinks the ultimate potential, how great this expansion could be. I'm curious what you think the potential of that is.
Well, I think that the program as it is now, it's grown slowly because the eligibility is what it is. There are a lot of students eligible, but I think that sort of proves the point of some of the critics, too, is that special needs students have taken advantage of this program far and above any other category. They're also the most expensive students to educate, so the general fund bears a significant cost for that, about upwards of $35 million this year. But beyond that, you start to get into – there are students on the Navajo Nation, as Jonathan mentioned, that benefit from this program. And the ASBA is – and the school board, school districts are not afraid of school choice. We will gladly compete, but we want to compete on a level playing field. What you see with the students that are maybe not disabled or don't have access to a traditional public school in – or a private school in their area, they may not be able to get to the private school. So that might limit growth. But again, what are we doing then? They can't get to a private school because they can't afford to get there, or they can't afford the difference between the ESA and the tuition. And we're leaving them with what in terms of a public school infrastructure? I mean,
that's Chris Cotterman. He is the Government Relations Director for the Arizona School Boards Association. He will no doubt be watching the debate. Will you be at the Capitol this afternoon for the debate on this?
Yes, I will be there. There is a coalition called AZ Schools Now, of which ASBA is a part. Also, teachers, public education advocates, children's advocates. All of us will be there, and we will be advocating against the ESA expansion.
All right, Chris Cotterman, thanks a lot.